The following program is brought to you in living color.
In tasting wines, there's three things that you watch and enjoy. One is the color of the wine. See how nice the color of this is? And the next thing is the aroma. And you smell the product. Hold it.
Hold it by the stem.
Yeah, the proper way is right here. Well, here, let me just do catch it like I did. Grab the glass like that.
Is it glass?
Yep. Yeah, it's a cup. Okay.
Yes.
Just grab that and...
It is?
No, the glass. The cup. Take the cup. No. Take the cup. Here.
It's The Wine Crush, the show that's all about the grape and the lifestyle it creates. The Wine Crush is presented by Lot18.com. Now, here's your host for The Wine Crush, Laura Lawson.
Thank you for a memorable afternoon. Usually one must go to a bowling alley to meet a woman of your stature.
Welcome to The Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson, your favorite Chardonnay-guzzling diva, and you are listening to the show that's all about the grape in all its glory, all the vine, all the time, everything you ever wanted to know about that adorable little grape but were afraid to ask. That's what we're here for. We are your online media resource and your on-air resource. Hey, Kent, a bowling alley? How long did it take you to find that?
You know what? I saw that movie a couple of weeks ago, and you're the person I thought of when I heard that line.
Should I feel better about this? Should I feel comforted?
It's a good line.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right. For our loyal listeners, as always, Kent having fun with me from the outset of the show. But yes, once again, you are listening to The Wine Crush. And, you know, I have had such great success lately kidnapping people. You know, it's bad enough that I torment Kent on a regular basis, but apparently winemakers are glutton for punishment. Well, we've been fortunate, of course, you know, we've had Rob Davis, we've had Dan Cohn, we've had a number of the Sonoma boys in here. Well, Napa has finally stepped up and decided that they wanted their own voice too. So yes, sure enough, someone was silly enough to put their little toe into the studio, and it's with great pleasure that today's guest host is going to be Mr. Jeffrey Stambor, the winemaker for BV. Jeffrey, welcome to the Wine Crush.
Thanks. Actually, I'm here on my own free will, So
give it time. I noticed that unlike the other people, we had enough sense to put a glass of wine in front of you. So I figure we can just make sure that you are relaxed and happy, and that means that ropes and bungee cords and duct tape aren't necessary.
No, so. It's a pleasure to be here. I want to represent Napa as well.
You need to. You need to. The Sonoma boys definitely have gotten a heads up on things. But I have to go ahead and admit, for our listeners, Jeffrey Stambor, he is one of an illustrious career winemakers at BV. He's been at BV since 89. But what he does not know is that I would say out of all wineries and all the boys out there, I am very, very sorry. I love all of your wineries equally. But if there is one that I feel really a cogent tangent to, it is BV. Now, I will tell you why. I was fortunate enough for the centennial anniversary of BV to be invited out to Union Square. And me and one of my girlfriends got to be Lucy and Ethel. And we got to get in the vats dressed up like Lucy and Ethel and stomp grapes. So ever since then, and ever since doing the 100th anniversary, there's just something about BV. I always talk about I'm a University of Georgia fan. I bleed red and black anyway. I just blend right in with your label. So, Jeffrey, I have a long history with BV, certainly not as long as yours, but definitely it is one of my most passionate, favorite wineries out there.
Well, great. I'm glad we captured you. I actually remember that event, centennial event. In fact, I still have the neon orange pants that they gave, you know, the different team members for that thing.
So very, very good. See, someone else isn't insane as I am. So yeah. See, Kent, it's not just me.
Were you Lucy or Ethel?
What do you think?
I got you down for Lucy.
Yeah, definitely, right. Definitely Lucy.
Do the wah. No, don't do that.
No, let's not. I leave that winding up to you.
Okay.
Okay, for our listeners, seriously, Jeffrey, it's nice to have you here at The Crush. We are going to have fun with you today. We're going to talk a little bit about BV. We're going to talk about wines. And, of course, as always, we are going to try and demystify the winemaker and make people realize that you are just an average person that puts your
above average.
Above average. I apologize. Definitely above average. For those of us that are below average or past that, we never really can aspire much more to anything else. But that means that you have to get put on the spot here at The Crush. So we do wine recommendations every week. And I am going to be partial, and for our listeners, yes, I am going to step up. I'm going to make the red wine recommendation today, but it's actually pretty easy for me, and I'm going to do red first because we're going to make Jeffrey come up with the white. The red wine recommendation for this week is obviously going to be the 2007 BV Georges Latour Reserve Cabernet. Now, of course, this is a wine that has been made continuously since 1936. It is probably... I'm not sure. I'm sure Jeffrey can give me the answer on this. I would imagine it's the oldest contiguously produced Cabernet in California, at least of that cult status or that reserve status. But obviously the history shows through. This is Jeffrey's effort with the 2007. It is vibrant. You get a lot of great black fruit on it. You get a little bit of the cedar notes. Of course, you get that Rutherford dust in it that just really swells and opens up on your palate. It's always nice. Talk about true terroir to taste that wine. You just immediately know what you're drinking and where you are. But this is both you never want to say an everyday drinking wine, but this is one of those wines you don't need to be afraid to open a cork on. You don't need to actually have a special occasion to open this wine. Because one thing I've always noticed that BV does well is whether you want to lay this wine down for 15 years or you want to drink it in 15 minutes, it appeals to both sections of the populace. Whether you're an instant gratification person like me, whose cellar is a dairy crate, or whether you're someone who wants to have a collection and lay down cases and cases and cases, so be it. This is definitely the wine for you. And I will say this, I'll go a step further. For people who are trying to understand Rutherford Bench, and to understand that particular area that the BV Winery is around, this is the flavor, the profile, the taste that truly epitomizes it. So there we go. My red wine recommendation for the week is going to be the 2007 BV Georges Latour. Now, Jeffrey, you get to sit here and hear me talk about your wine, and I'm going to put you on the spot because I am the white wine drinker. What white wine are you going to recommend for everyone this week?
So, you know, we were talking about this prior, and I'm just trying to get my head around, you know, what would be, you know, a great example of something that I like as well, the style that I like. So I'm going to kind of go old school Napa Valley.
Oh, a winemaker from BV going old school Napa Valley. I would never guess that. Yeah. No, winery founded in 1900? Nah, fine. Let's pick something young and punky.
Yeah, okay. No, I got to go with,
all right.
And I'll go with two because I think they both, you know, really represent a style that you don't find very often anymore. So I'm going to go with Mayacamas and Stony Hill Chardonnay.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, really great interpretations of, you know, that show mineral elements of California Chardonnay more than I think anywhere else. The oak component is very understated. These are very elegant wines that and really show the full potential after a certain amount of bottle age as well.
It's so funny that you talk about this because one of the tangents I've been on, you know, we joke around about being the Chardonnay sipping diva, is that we got to this place with Napa and Sonoma and California as a whole that it just became this oak baseball bat, I'm going to beat you over the head contest. I'm going to see how manipulated, how fat, how flabby, how much I can show off and do to this poor little grape at one time. Both the wines you recommended, I don't think I've had Stony Hill in 5 years. I will fix that in the next 2 weeks. But both these wines are what the history of Napa Valley Chardonnay is built on in the sense that they're elegant. They have that minerality. They have a chalkiness to them. They have something that's not overwhelming, yet when you have it in the glass, there's so many great layers. Great, great call.
Yeah.
And you've made me think of something I haven't thought of in a
long
time.
There you go. All right.
Of course, those brain cells are now not happy that you made them fall into use, but that's fine. All right. Now, we're going to start this. This is how we start every time we sit down with a winemaker. Who is Jeffrey Stambor, and why the hell are you in the wine business?
Yeah.
There's got to be a reason. Where did it come from, and how'd you get here?
Yeah, so do I get to go all the way back?
You can do whatever you want to
until
I tell you no.
Okay.
Okay.
Until I get the universal wrap-up sign.
Yeah. Let's go. No.
So, well, I grew up in northeastern Ohio, so there's no real great wine history in my family.
Well, the Ohio River Valley,
the Great Lakes actually did make some wines. But what that meant is that I had an impetus to leave northeastern Ohio. And so I moved to California when I was 19 years old and ostensibly to go to veterinary school at the University of California, Davis.
It's always funny, though. I'm just because the number of people I've talked to that are coming from the Midwest, they're always 18 or 19. They always move out to California with the idea of going to Davis for some reason or the other. That or they're following the dead, one of the two.
Well, that was Santa Cruz was my other option at that point. And, you know, I sometimes wonder if I had taken the other road, what would I would be looking back at now?
All right.
But no, I ended up at Davis and just really got interested in wines from the agricultural perspective. So what I studied at Davis was plant science. And so I learned about agriculture, learned about growing grapes in particular. And then so it kind of mirrors my evolution as a winemaker. So I learned about the science of winemaking and grape growing when I was in Davis. As soon as I left Davis, I went to the Savoie to visit my sister who was living there and thought, well, this would be a nice 2-month break and then I'll come back and work the harvest in California. Well, I was gone for a little over 2 years. And when I look back on that now, that's when I learned about the cultural aspects of wines, you know, so where they fit in, you know, fine dining, where they fit just in the history of, you know, the evolution of winemaking. It's also the time that I met my wife, who was actually a fifth generation Californian, but, you know, you have to go away from home.
Apparently, you have to go across the ocean to meet the fifth generation Californian. That does make a lot of sense. Hey, Jeff, remember how I was joking around? We are going to have to take a small break right here, but we're going to make sure we pick off right where you left off, meeting your wife and coming back across the pond. All right, quick break here on The Crush, and when we return, more of Jeffrey Stambor, who I will add is here willingly.
The Wine Crush, presented by Lot18.com.
With so many wine choices, it can be difficult to know what type of wine to buy. Lot 18 is a convenient and affordable new way to sample great wines. Each product is sourced by Lot 18 experts directly with the producer. This allows us to offer wine shipped to you at low prices.
Start your own wine adventure with Lot18.com today. Register now for free at Lot 18 and receive $10 off your first order. Visit Lot18.com/TheWineCrush. That's Lot18.com/TheWineCrush.
Are you feeling the credit card crunch? Increasing prices and the cost of credit are stretching budgets and preventing people just like you from getting ahead or just catching up with their debts. American Financial Solutions is a nonprofit organization that can help you get back on track with your debts and strengthen your financial situation. We offer a customized debt management plan, not a consolidation loan or a settlement, but a renegotiation of terms with your current creditors. You could benefit from lower interest rates, reduced fees, finally having your past due accounts brought back into current status, and a single monthly payment. So if you're falling behind on your credit cards, medical bills, or accounts and collections, get your current statements together and give American Financial Solutions a call now.
Here's the number for your free debt analysis. 800-430-8804. 800-430-8804. 800-430-8804. Not all services available in all states. Terms and conditions apply.
Designer and car builder Carol Shelby knows cars.
I have a passion for cars.
Carol Shelby recommends Z-Max Micro Lubricant.
This stuff really works. It penetrates the metal.
Add Z-Max to your oil and gas. It cleans internal components, delivers a cleaner fuel system, extends engine life, and improves engine performance.
Z-Max is going to give it a longer life and improve the performance.
Z-Max, available at auto parts stores and at zmax.com.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
I might look like an adult, like a person who could possibly be a parent, but I have no idea how to talk like one. And everyone knows that if you want to be a parent, you have to sound good when you say things like, "Don't make me turn this car around," or "Because I said so," or "Don't make me come back there." I don't even really know what those things mean, but I know that I actually believed my parents when they said them to me. How did they manage to sound so convincing? Here we go. "Don't make me come back there." Oh, no, that's not tough enough at all. Kids can sense weakness. "Don't make me come back there." Ooh, yeah, that's better. In fact, that kind of sounded like my dad. Weird.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to listen to you practice your dad voice. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUsKids, and the Ad Council.
Son, I want you home by 10, all right? I know.
Hold on. Listen, we need to talk about drinking.
Hmm.
You know how I feel about alcohol.
Yeah, I know.
Seriously, you're way too young to drink. I know some kids are drinking, but you're my kid. And just because they drink doesn't mean you have to.
I know.
I mean, you're still growing, you're still developing. You may think you can handle it, but you're not a grown-up yet. It's dangerous.
I know, okay?
Teenagers know everything. So talk about underage drinking before they know it all. Before they're teens.
Listen, when you drink, it screws up your judgment. I don't want you getting hurt. You could make some serious mistakes.
I know, I know.
Listen to me. This is real.
I know, okay? I know.
Start talking before they start drinking. And keep talking. To learn more about the dangers of underage drinking and what to say to your kids, go to stopalcoholabuse.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to The Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson. Jeffrey Stambor has willingly still sat through the break. He is here, no duct tape involved. And he's starting to relax and look happy. I don't know, his fingers are digging into the table. I don't know if that's because it's my shrill voice or just because he's terrified about being here. But we'll forgive him. We'll see if he hangs out for a little bit longer.
You're my ride. I can't leave.
Oh, that's true. I found a new way to have people captive. Now, trust me, Kent will probably drop you off somewhere, but I think he'll take you somewhere north, and it's kind of scary up there.
There are two buses right behind you there, Jeff, so through the window.
I did see that. Yeah. It looks like my demographic, too.
Outstanding. All right, so when we last left our hero and last left Jeffrey, he was getting ready to come back across the pond, to come back into California, had met your wife, fifth-generation Californian. And now what? So you understand the culture of winemaking. You understand the science of winemaking. Now what do you do with it?
Yeah, got to get a job.
There we go. That's the hardest part of this wine business, is having to work.
Yeah. No, well, you know, you pick something that you love and you never work a day in your life. So I came back to California and worked at a couple of small places and actually worked making method champenoise as well, which was a really interesting segue, but realistically not something that I was interested in, because given my kind of agricultural background and my interest in grapevines and how they really set the tone for the wine, you know, it was going to be something that was more terroir driven.
Okay.
So, you know, I luckily, I think, stumbled into an open position at Beaulieu, which at the time was a very unique position because it was a combination of grower relations, some estate viticulture, but also doing some winemaking as well. So for as large an operation as it was a kind of a interesting liaison.
That's a huge, just trying to think of all the different aspects that you were involved in. That's a lot of hats for someone just coming into a property.
Right. But it was really, I mean, it was unbelievably interesting to, you know, to be able to put those pieces together, essentially. So I went through, I don't know, half a dozen different interviews, you know, which was, you know, very thorough, but it was good because they were really checking to see what my practical background was as well. So, you know, one of the interviews was in the vineyard. Here's this vine. What would you do with it?
You can talk the talk, but can you walk the walk? What's wrong with the vine? Can you fix it? How do we do this?
Right.
Got it.
So, January of 1989 is when I started my career at Beaulieu. And so through the years, the position, my responsibilities, everything had evolved, you know, really evolved. I had a strong cellar background just by being a cellar rat for a number of years.
You've been a cellar rat. That's where you start.
Yeah. And so I was able to use that at Beaulieu. And then so it evolved over the years of having responsibility for more winemaking, more day-to-day winemaking, then concentrating on Cabernet, concentrating on Georges Latour, to the point 3 years ago, I guess, is when it was that I was actually gained responsibility, accountability for all the wines that we produce at the winery in Rutherford.
So it's your job now. One way or the other, it's going to be your fault or your answer.
Right,
got it.
Right. Well, which is fine. You know, give me the accountability, the responsibility, but, you know, give me the ability to create the culture and the kind of work environment as well then.
Makes sense. Give you enough power to make it successful and to do what you want to do with it. Here's what's neat is I have had the pleasure over many years of talking to a lot of people, and whether their last names were on the label or whether their last names weren't or whether they had just bought into the business, you are one of the I don't want to say rare, because everybody who is a winemaker at some point has
is rare
their up.
Or has rare you for quality some, quirks.
It's amazing that you have paid your dues, be it from the field to the cellar, all the way up at the same winery, and now have total responsibility over everything going on. That and the fact that you have to know where all the skeletons are.
Yeah.
You know where everybody is buried on that property. You know whether it's in lot number 4, if you know it's in number 1, you know where they all are.
I do.
Okay. They didn't have a choice. Jeffrey Stambor going to be the winemaker at BV, till 2030.
Yeah.
We will be having fun with that. Well, okay. So now we know who Jeffrey is. We know where you are. Something I want to investigate, and I don't want to get into a drawn-out answer on this, but as you take BV, as you see what's happening right now, y'all just did something really, really neat for BV George Latour Private Reserve, and I think that's going to be the direction the ship is going. Summarize for our listeners real quick, easy for me to say, what y'all just did at BV and how it's going to affect you.
Yeah, so we've got this winemaking facility in Rutherford, and we've been making under the same conditions, constraints, limitations, everything from our Carnero Chardonnay, Napa Cabernet, through our flagship wine, the George Latour Private Reserve. So for a number of years, we lobbied from the winemaking end of the business that we really needed some more dedicated resources to make George Latour. So in 2008, after a lot of cajoling, we established this standalone, isolated winery within the winery that is solely for the production of George Latour.
So you have something that's entirely for the wine I recommended today.
Yes, absolutely.
See, I'm brilliant. Yeah. I just think ahead. That's how we work. All right, we're going to have to make Jeffrey take a pause, and we're going to take a quick break. When we return, we'll talk more about Latour and the winery within the winery.
Sometimes shopping for wine can be intimidating. What if you could have your own team of wine experts to help you discover new wines and great values? Lot 18 members have access to some of the finest wines from around the world, and each selection is sourced by Lot 18 experts directly with the producer.
Start your own wine adventure with Lot18.com today. Register now for free at Lot 18 and receive $10 off your first order. Visit Lot18.com/TheWineCrush. That's Lot18.com/TheWineCrush.
Live from Progressive.
Flo here. With more discounts than ever before, Progressive can save you a lot of money on your car insurance.
Savings!
Oh, you can get bigger savings than that.
Savings!
That's close, but you can really save a lot of money.
You're gonna get some savings, savings,
much
savings.
Better.
Discounts for safe driving, owning a home, and more. Now that's Progressive. Call or click today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and its affiliates, Mayfield Village, Ohio. Prices vary based on how you buy. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
What would you do if you had to choose between the buffalo and the giraffes? Between a flower or an elephant? What would you choose? What if you had to decide between a 100-year-old tree and a 1,000,000-year-old beech? Between drinking clean water or breathing clean air? would you make the right choice? Would there be a right choice? Now there's a way to help. Not just one, but all these things. EarthShare, the world's leading environmental groups working together. It's one choice we can all live with.
This ad sponsored by Ad Council and EarthShare.
We are talking about our world today. Oh, and someone's on the line.
Hi, I'm Jacqueline.
Welcome, Jacqueline. How old are you? You sound so young.
I'm 8.
Oh, wow. I assume you're a student, right?
Yes, from Jefferson Elementary. And I have a question.
Sure. And what's your question?
We all know the Earth has 7 continents that currently carry 193 countries. Those continents make up 29% of the Earth's surface, meaning that the vast majority of our planet, 71%, is comprised of water. Taking into consideration man automatically adapts to environmental conditions, why is it that I need to take swimming lessons?
Are you ready for kids who eat healthy? Good nutrition can lead to great things. To find out how a healthy lifestyle can help your child succeed, go to mypyramid.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the Ad Council and USDA.
From the vantage point, Mafatu saw 6 war canoes drawn up on the beach, but what held the boy's eyes in awful trance were the figures springing and leaping about the flames, darting, shifting, bounding toward the sky. The eaters of men. Cannibals. Firelight glistened on their oiled bodies, on flashing spears and bristling decorations. Mafatu watched the strange scene, powerless to move, and he felt doom itself breathing chill upon his neck. In that very instant, he heard a crashing in the undergrowth. 4 figures were tearing toward him through the jungle. He could see them now. He turned and ran blindly down the trail, slipping, sliding, stumbling, his breath all but choking in his throat. Only one thought gave him courage as he ran. His canoe ready and waiting. If only he could reach it before the savages overtook him. Explore new worlds. Find out what happens next by reading the book Call It Courage by Armstrong Sperry. For other great book ideas, visit literacy.gov.
Welcome back to The Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson. And yes, we still have Mr. Jeffrey Stambor here with us. Jeffrey, are you still happy?
I'm ecstatic.
I can tell. And no, we haven't drugged him. And can't stop rolling your eyes in there. He does look happy, really.
He looks, well, I mean, for a man who's chained to a chair, I think he's very happy.
You're not supposed to say that. We're supposed to be behaving, sorry. Remember. Okay, when we last left, once again, we were talking about a winery within a winery, which is something that's very, very unique for Napa. If you think about, for everyone who's gone up Highway 29, and yes, all of you are nodding because you know exactly where BV is. Everyone does. It's right there by the Rutherford Grill where everyone has to stop and sit outside the fireplace and have one of those big Oreo things. But past that, everybody knows where BV is. And to be able to undertake this kind of project in such an esteemed, number one, location, but number two, building and property is just outstanding. It's a testament to what you're doing, and obviously it's a testament to what everyone thinks of BV, that they'll put this much money and effort into it.
Yeah, it really shows the commitment to producing that ultimate artistic expression of Cabernet Sauvignon at BV, and that's the Georges de Latour.
I thought this was humorous. I have spent a little time with Jeffrey today, and we were sitting at lunch. And a gentleman looked at Jeffrey and said, "So does this mean we're going to make much more BV Georges Latour?" And Jeffrey just looked at him and said, "Nope." No. And that was the end of the conversation. But a lot of times I see where people get that in their head. Are you building this facility because you can make more product so you can make more money? It's no, we can make a better product. Essentially, is that what they're saying? Or
yeah, the whole rationale for this dedicated facility is that we eliminate all the limitations and compromises that would come up during the production. So the tanks are sized such that we can take specific pieces of a vineyard block. So if there's a gravel streak that's ripening different from the rest of the block, we can pick that separately and ferment it independently. Or if the vintage conditions are such that the north face of the vine matures faster than the south face of the vine, we can separate those out as well.
So you can be ultra picky.
Ultra picky.
Outstanding. That sounds like a job for a woman, I think. Yeah. But, you know, we'll give Jeffrey some credit.
It gets me in touch with my feminine side.
That's what we like to hear. Two daughters and a wife. Yeah. And he's going to talk about feminine side. Man, his wife's going to hear this when he gets home. He's in all kind of trouble. Yeah. Promise you that. Well, it's funny you say that, because when people talk about this, now I'm going to get totally off tangent. I tend to do this on people, just see if you can jump in right along. I think some of the things that I remember most about BV are blocks. When you talk about the four blocks that are around BV, block one, block two, block three, block four, is that when you're talking about keeping things separate? Are you talking about keeping clones separate? I mean, obviously, there's a great sense of history, whether it's BV1, BV2, BV3. Is that what you're trying to idealize, or are you literally going to look at it row by row by row?
No, it's so at the historic property. So the original De La Tour estate was first planted in 1900. And there's about 80 acres of mostly Cabernet Sauvignon at that. There's a little bit of Merlot, a little bit of Petit Verdot. And then BV2, which is predominantly Cabernet, but a number of different clones of Cabernet. So each block is set up by different trellising, by different clones of Cabernet. So that's the kind of specificity that I'm looking at within a certain block. I'm going to pick part of it and ferment it separately than the other part of it.
Well, two questions. I'm going to ask a question for our listeners that are relatively new to wine, and then I'm going to ask a question that are for us true aficionados that know BV. The first question is for everybody. When you say the vines were first planted at BV in 1900, are any of those vines still around?
No.
Okay. People are going to ask me that question. No, they're going to say, well, it's 1900. Are they still there? Where are they? Are they this big? Are they 200 feet tall? What are they? So, okay, number one, that's for our listeners. No, the vines aren't still there. But two, for those of us who know BV from a long time ago, does the clone series still exist? Does BV still do a clone 4, clone 5, clone 6, clone 7?
Yeah, we still do. Actually, clones 4 and 6 are the ones that we've historically identified. So this goes back to the early 80s when...
You're not supposed to give years. You don't date how long some of us have been in the wine business. But anyway, please go ahead.
No, this is just, okay. This is before me even. So we started,
thanks, Jeffrey.
We started looking at different clones of Cabernet and how they performed in Napa Valley as far as wine quality and production levels, et cetera, et cetera. And this was just as a sense of wanting to learn something. Then along comes the late 80s, early 90s when phylloxera reappeared in the Napa Valley, and essentially a significant percentage of the Napa acreage was replanted. Some of our peers had to look to the French experience to see what clones of Cabernet to replant their vineyards with, which if you've ever been in Bordeaux in the summer and Napa in the summer, they're very different climates.
Very much so.
So grapes respond differently. We had the experience of having, under our own conditions, this set of 14 different clones that were gathered from around the world, how they worked under our conditions. So lo and behold, late 80s, early 90s come along, we're faced with the same replanting decisions as our neighbors, but we've got now 10, 12 years of experience of these different clones of Cabernet, so we know what we're going to replant our vineyard with. And so that's where we started with clones 4 and 6. We've recently reintroduced one of the clones that was in that trial that was originally dismissed because of the super low yielding characteristic. But in today's world, we can adjust that yield characteristic, but it brings an unbelievable concentrated fruit character to the mix as well.
Now, see, it's fascinating for me. Obviously, you have the science, you have the background to talk about this. But if you've noticed, I'm sure you have, and I'm sure as our listeners walk down the aisles of their favorite mega mart to get their wine, you're starting to see wines, whether it says Dijon clone on it for Pinots, whether it says 337 clone for Cabernet, that people are trying to isolate and showing, hey, this is special, this is what we're doing with it. And once again, it's one of those things that BV was the first on. I don't remember anybody ever doing a Cabernet clone before you did, saying this is what this clone is. I remember thinking, the first time I saw it, I'm like, clown. I'd had a little bit to drink. Yeah. The first time I saw the bottle, and I got to see Clone and Bozo, the original Bozo, together. And so I saw Bozo first, and then I saw Clown. I'm like, Bozo and Clown? What are they thinking, Joel? What are you doing? And so it took a while for me to identify that the clone was actually the different types of Cabernet there were, and I learned more off that myself. So for our listeners, if you ever want to go out and you want to truly investigate Cabernets, it's fun, whether you're looking at Cabernets, whether you're looking at Pinots, even some Chardonnays are doing it today. Find those wines that are mentioning on the label what type of clone they're using, and you can truly start to get into, you don't want to say the actual mechanics of the grape, but you can certainly see how different types of grapes can really appeal to things. Hey, we're going to take a small break right here, and I promise we are going to get Jeffrey on the rack and ask him some very fun questions when we come back from this small commercial break.
The Wine Crush, presented by Lot18.com.
With so many wine choices, it can be difficult to know what type of wine to buy. Lot 18 is a convenient and affordable new way to sample great wines. Each product is sourced by Lot 18 experts directly with the producer. This allows us to offer wine shipped to you at low prices.
Start your own wine adventure with Lot18.com today. Register now for free at Lot 18 and receive $10 off your first order. Visit Lot18.com/The Wine Crush. That's Lot18.com/The Wine Crush.
I'm sitting at mid-court, and the last time around, the wave took out half of my Coke. And it's coming again.
The wave is coming.
We, the fans, must stop this wave and protect our Coke. It's still coming. Cheerleaders, fire the t-shirt guns. Buzzer guy, distract them with buzzing. Wolf, howl. Hold on! Looks like we did it. Nice job, everybody.
Coca-Cola, open happiness.
Are you feeling the credit card crunch, increasing prices and the cost of credit are stretching budgets and preventing people just like you from getting ahead or just catching up with their debts? American Financial Solutions is a nonprofit organization that can help you get back on track with your debts and strengthen your financial situation. We offer a customized debt management plan, not a consolidation loan or a settlement, but a renegotiation of terms with your current creditors. You could benefit from lower interest rates, reduced fees, finally having your past due accounts brought back into current status, and a single monthly payment. So if you're falling behind on your credit cards, medical bills, or accounts and collections, get your current statements together and give American Financial Solutions a call now.
Here's the number for your free debt analysis. 800-430-8804. 800-430-8804. 800-430-8804. Not all services available in all states. Terms and conditions apply.
Mozart's toasties are so very great. Kids rejoice when Mozart's on their plate.
They know they're quite nutritious.
And so delicious.
They'll lick the dishes.
And soon you realize how impactful your kids' involvement in the arts can be. Make more friends and express their individuality. When they learn to play some music, act or paint or dance or write creatively.
Hot from the toaster and filled with the essential creative thinking skills of an 18th century musical genius, Mozart Toasties are an important part of an arts-healthy childhood. Studies show that involvement in the arts helps kids increase test scores and promotes academic achievement. Feed your kids the arts. For 10 simple ways to learn how, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. The arts. Ask for more. Brought to you by Americans for the Arts, the NAM Foundation, and the Ad Council.
I'm Laura Lawson. This is The Wine Crush, and we have spent the last better part of an hour talking with Jeffrey Stambor, the winemaker for BV. So it's been nice getting a sense of Jeffrey. It's been nice getting a sense of BV. But it's always fun to try and tie this together with some listeners' questions and emails that we have received. Just remember, the show is about you. Well, 90% of the time it's about you. Most of the time it's about me. But nevertheless, do reach out to us, L. Lawson. Wine Crush.
Ah.
Wow. My brain is not working today.
You want the bigger cue cards now? You want the bigger ones?
Are you digging on my HD too?
No.
At this point, winecrush.com, hit info. It will actually go straight to me. It will be outstanding. Try Laura Lawson at winecrush.com if you want to send us an email. Or since Kent is harassing me, please do call the wine line, 877-4-CRUSH-1, and feel free to talk to him directly because he needs some abuse today. But we do take your calls, we do take your emails, and do appreciate it. But I'm going to try and put this convoluted thing all together on an email I received last week. The email essentially was asking me to please break down the differences between French and American oak and do so very, very pointedly to give an answer that would to make an unmistakable difference so you could pick it out. And I knew that this question would take the better part of a show. Now, once again, Jeffrey and I had lunch today, and he said something that in all my years of the wine business, I have never thought of, and it never clicked with me. But he was talking about Techtelchef and talking about making B.V. Latour in the 40s. And he said, well, of course, we weren't using French oak in the 40s. And it just kind of hit me. Wow, is that when we started going towards American oak? Is that where we really started telling the difference? So, Jeffrey, I hate to put you on the spot, but it's so rare that someone actually makes me put a coherent thought together that this one really, really struck me. Now, obviously, you know the history of BV and putting it together, but can you speak about that broadly? Is the 40s when we decided, hey, American trees are okay to make barrels? Or
well, I think what we decided in the 40s, or Andre decided in the 40s, was the question was either to age it in a barrel or not. And if he chose that he wanted to age it in a barrel, he only had one choice, and that was American oak. So, I mean, they're different species of white oak, and that's one of the things that makes the difference. That species differentiation points to a different way that you cut the wood, which, you know, plays into it.
Cuts into a wider grain, cuts into everything else. But, for our listener, I promise we will do a whole show on going into French oak versus American oak. I'll even give you some wines you can taste back and forth with that. But it is interesting to think about, had it not been for the wars, had it not been for not being able to get French oak that everybody who had come over here was comfortable with, would we see as much American oak today as we do? And that's just, that would be a fun thesis. For those of you out there paying attention that are having to write something, that would be an interesting study.
Yeah. The other thing was the real big boom in American oak used for wine barrels didn't happen until the mid to late 80s when the brown spirits industry started to decline. And so you had these very well-established cooperages in the United States who, you know, there wasn't a demand for bourbon barrel anymore. And so they started taking those, and that also coincided with the upswing in wine consumption in the United States. And so they started looking more closely at how could they use American oak and what of the coopering processes could they utilize with American oak to make it more of a wine-friendly barrel.
Huh. So between the bombing of France and between the bottoming out of bourbon, that's how we wound up with so many big chewy Chardonnays in the early 90s. Got it.
Yeah. That's how we ended up using a lot more American oak.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's an interesting answer to it. I don't have Jeffrey for that much longer, so I want to touch on something that I opened with. You do something that I find fascinating with your wines. It doesn't matter who we're talking to. Generally, when I speak to a winemaker, they want to either emphasize the fact that their wines are vibrant, they're young, they're fruity, it's time to drink this Cabernet right now. Or they want to say, hey, listen, the wines are good, but hey, 10 years down the road, they're going to be exceptional. You are one of the few people that are insane enough to try and find a balance between both. Is there a reason for this? Why do you want to capture? I mean, obviously, I know why you'd want to, but how do you find a way to make a wine that's meant to age 15 years drinkable now without a whip and a chair?
Yeah, that's the real fine line, and you have two opposing, you know, points of view almost. And the one thing that really I heard, you know, 15, 20 years ago, early on in my career, that I really agreed with from a wine writer was that, you know, the...
I'm sorry, a winemaker agreed with something from a wine writer? Did I miss something? Okay, please.
It was generic enough.
Okay, there we go.
But it was that, you know, a wine has to have balance to it. So regardless of if it's young or you're looking at it with significant bottle age, it still has to have that sense of balance to it. So a wine that doesn't have that sense of balance young And I think too many wines can be sold at, well, it's not in balance now, but it will be in 5 years or 10 years.
Well, because it's actually pandering to the public. We're all unbalanced, yeah. So the wine might as well just be unbalanced to start with.
That's a tip-off that it won't be in balance in 10 years either. So it has to have that sense of balance to it the day it's released. And it will continue to have that as it ages and gains complexity. But the realities of today's consumer is it has to be drinkable upon release.
Now.
Now.
I want it right now.
Not now, but right now.
Yes. And I want it delivered.
Yeah. And but there's a certain amount of expectation around fine wines is that they gain complexity with time in the bottle.
Well, with your wines then, what do you recommend? John Q. Public comes up to you as you're pouring out a tasting somewhere. And they say, okay, well, your 2008 George Latour is due out sometime in the next few months. Do I buy it and lay it down or do I buy it and drink it? What do you tell that consumer?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, both, please, right now.
Right.
How about not now, right now, okay.
Buy a case and drink a bottle every, you know, depending on the wine, the George Latour, buy a case and drink a bottle every year.
But that'll only last me 6 years.
Then buy two.
Okay.
No, it is because, and also to try and figure out what the preference, the personal palate preference of a consumer is as well. Because the wines are very different, I think. What is... you know, what you like about a young wine isn't going to be what you like about an older wine. And so...
Just like women.
Yeah.
Okay. But if you think about it, it does hold true, and that's something I have preached over and over again. One of the reasons why people get all excited and they say they love older wines, especially the people who are just getting into wine, who are just learning it and have that epiphany when they taste a 10 or 15-year-old wine, oh my God, this is wonderful, it's because it's soft. It's because it's approachable, it's drinkable, and all of a sudden when you take that big sip of it, yes, it's in balance, but also you don't feel like you've just had every taste bud stripped out of your mouth. You don't feel like you've been sucking on aspirin and need to go have a big glass of water. So I think that's it's something that's admirable that you managed to find a wine that both has the appeal right now and 10, 15 years down the road, we'll certainly be kicking back and enjoying it.
It's that. To me, what separates great good wines from exceptional wines is texture.
That's a whole interesting... now, see, I wish we had started off with that. We could have a field day with that. So now you're going to have to come back. We're definitely going to have you back because I want to explore that. But right now, unfortunately, we have to explore yet another commercial break. So hang out. We will wrap up and get Jeffrey's final opinion on what he thinks the ultimate thing a winemaker can do to make his wine exceptional.
The Wine Crush, presented by Lot18.com.
Sometimes shopping for wine can be intimidating. What if you could have your own team of wine experts to help you discover new wines and great values? Lot 18 members have access to some of the finest wines from around the world. And each selection is sourced by Lot 18 experts directly with the producer.
Start your own wine adventure with Lot18.com today. Register now for free at Lot 18 and receive $10 off your first order. Visit Lot18.com/The Wine Crush. That's Lot18.com/The Wine Crush.
Convenient? You could say that.
Lots of branches, lots of ATMs, online, on your phone. When it comes to ways to bank, Bank of America's got it covered.
With so many ATMs, I can do my banking anytime, anywhere. There's one right by work.
I've got a Bank of America near my gym.
There's one near my home, near where the kids play soccer.
I like to do my banking online. Pay my bills, set up alerts. It's fast, secure.
I'm more of a mobile person. With Bank of America's mobile app, I can use my smartphone to transfer funds, check my balances, right here in the grandstands during a yellow flag.
Bank whenever, wherever, however you want, with Bank of America, the official bank of NASCAR. To learn more, go to bankofamerica.com.
Requires enrolling in online banking. Carrier fees may apply. Online bill pays and optional service alerts not available in Idaho or Washington. Bank of America NA, member FDIC, copyright 2011, Bank of America Corporation. NASCAR is a registered trademark of the National Association for Stock Car Auto Racing, Inc., copyright 2011, HGJ Licensing, LLC.
Designer and car builder Carol Shelby knows cars.
I have a passion for cars.
Carol Shelby recommends Z-Max Micro Lubricant.
This stuff really works. It penetrates the metal.
Add Z-Max to your oil and gas. It cleans internal components, delivers a cleaner fuel system, extends engine life, and improves engine performance.
Z-Max is going to give it a longer life and improve the performance.
Z-Max, available at auto parts stores and at zmax.com.
Have you ever dreamed of being a karate master? Well, stop dreaming and start chomping with the Karate Glove.
Hi, my name's Molly, inventor of the Karate Glove, and I have just 1.5 words for you. Hi-ya!
The Karate Glove chomps through anything. Just put it on and instantly chomp through wood. Hi-hi! Concrete. Hi-ya! Brick walls. Hi-ya! Trees. Hi-ya! Small cars. It can even chomp through these 8 guitars. It chomps things.
If I can invent a karate glove, just imagine what you can do. Visit inventnow.org to get started on your invention. Anything's possible. Keep thinking.
Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
It's hi-ya time!
Welcome back to The Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson. All joking aside, I have enjoyed having Mr. Jeffrey Stambor, the winemaker for BV, here in the studio. Jeffrey, I hope you've had fun.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed it.
Okay. He's still smiling.
That's right.
We haven't totally traumatized him. Okay, as promised before the break, because we are slowly trying to wind this up, it seems like every time I talk to a winemaker, talk to someone who's made a lifelong career choice like you and I have in this wine business, there is one thing that makes them successful. There is one term. There is one thing that you have to have to be very, very good at what you do. If you could think of one word to summarize what it is that made you good at what you do, what would it be?
One word.
Now, see, we have to make you think. This is the price you pay. This is how I'm going to wind up with you duct tape here to the chair. I know this.
Inquisitiveness.
Okay. That's a great way to look at it. Is that because you're always trying to find something better, a different way to do something, or trying to question standards? Or
so this was – people would ask me because I had the experience of being able to work with Andrei Chelyachev, who, you know, really brought the modern winemaking to the Napa Valley many, many years ago. So they always ask me the secrets that Andre told me, and none of them are secrets. It's just a philosophy of always looking to see how you can improve what you do.
I think that's a great thing to look at it. We all need to seek to improve what we do. And I certainly know I need to seek and improve what I do by being able to get more of you in the studio. Jeffrey, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you here. I'm going to hold you on the spot. You're going to have to come back and join us some other time. All right, here at The Crush, as always, we're reminding you to sip socially, to drink responsibly, to drink what you like, not what you're told, but most importantly, in vino veritas, in wine, there's truth. I'm Laura Lawson, and I'll talk with you next week.